probably my favorite calendar holiday all year long because, as you know, I'm a huge fan of marmots. I go mot-spotting all the time, and groundhogs are marmots. So, where do you think I am? Am I sitting in here doing a radio show? Nope, I'm out spotting mots, which is what you should be doing too, but you're not. So, while I'm out spotting mots, you listen to this.
Groundhog, oh groundhog, what makes your back so brown? I've been digging in the dirt so darn long, trying to make my home in the ground, Lord, digging my hole in the ground. Shoulder up your gun and whistle up your dog. Shoulder up your gun and whistle up your dog. We're gonna hunt for the old groundhog. Old groundhog. Well, I'm gonna take you on a groundhog hunt. We're gonna hunt up some groundhog legends and some groundhog lore, some groundhog natural history, and I'm gonna tell you about a special gift I received from an old groundhog hunter. But first, a little spiritual advice. If you want to get to heaven, I'll tell you what to do. Just grease yourself with groundhog stew. When the devil come to get you with his right hand, you can slide on over to the promised land. I have a place over in Yancey County, North Carolina. It's in a holler, a steep little valley between two mountains. There's a little creek that runs down through the middle. The creek's name is Sang Branch, named for all the ginseng that's been found around there. Well, I built a little cabin up there on the side of the mountain, and there's four or five houses in that holler there along Sang Branch. Most of them, homes of traditional folks that have been born and raised there. And I have really enjoyed getting to know my neighbors. You know, there is such wisdom among these folks. I always found if you can get them started by asking the right questions, you can learn so much and you'll hear some great stories too. One day I looked out my window and I see my neighbor Lige, an elderly white-haired gentleman with bib overalls, and he's coming up the trail to my cabin. Well, my lawn wasn't exactly a lawn by that time of the year. It was mid-September and it was about waist high. And I could see Lige was kind of leaning to one side like he was carrying something, but I couldn't see what he had because the weeds were so tall. And to get to the cabin, it's kind of perched up on the edge of the hill. You have to come around the back. So I went to meet him at the back door and I said, "Well, Lige, what brings you here?" He said, "Doug, I brung you something you been a-wantin', buddy." He flopped a dead groundhog on my doormat. "You've been saying you've been wanting one of these, Doug, so I brung you this'n. He's been raiding my garden the whole summer before I got that rascal. Now, you said you was wanting a groundhog, didn't you?" I was thinking, I was wanting a dead groundhog? And then I remembered how I'd been up there a week or two before. And as usual, I was full of questions. I'd been asking about the old days, how folks would get along, what people used to eat, and things like that. And he was saying, "Oh, yeah, buddy, sometimes it was tough around here. Sometimes a chunk of cornbread and a few greens from the garden and some water is about all you'd have to eat all day. A lot of times we didn't have much meat, particularly in the summer. Well, sometimes somebody'd shoot him a groundhog, and we'd cook it up. And boy, when that thing come out of the oven, everybody'd crowd around to get him a bite of that groundhog." And his wife was saying, "Oh, yeah, them groundhogs, they're good eating, Doug. Oh, yeah, they're mighty fine." And I guess I must have remarked about how good it sounded and how I'd like to try that sometime. See, I thought I might get invited to dinner. Well, it looked like dinner had just come to me. "Well, thank you, Lars. That's so thoughtful of you to bring this one to me." He said, "Well, I just knew you was a-wantin' one, boy, and he's a-fattin' too. He's been in my corn patch all summer, buddy. He's corn-fed." Now, I've skinned and cleaned a few animals before, but of course I'm not going to learn anything if I don't ask any questions. So I was just trying to be the empty vessel. You can learn so much more by asking questions than by telling what you know. So I just said, "Lige, is there anything I need to know about how to fix this feller?" He goes, "Well, there ain't nothing much to it, Doug. You just skin him, clean him like you would anything else. Now, up under them front legs and them armpits, there's these little scent glands. They're like little kernels, and you just cut them little glands out, and it'll keep the meat from tasting so gamey." Well, you might think you have gamey pits, but let me tell you, a groundhog has got you beat. Well, I said, thanks, Lodge. I'll do that. I'll watch for those glands. And so I was getting ready to figure out a place on the back porch where I was going to hang up the groundhog so I could skin it. And Lodge said, now you be sure you save that hide. I said, save the hide? What would I do with the groundhog hide? Now, you know, groundhogs, they hibernate in the winter, so they don't really have to put on a thick fur coat like a mink or a fox. I mean, they've got hair, but it's sort of sparse, grizzled-looking, and it's coarse. Definitely not what you'd call a soft, luxuriant fur. I said, Lodge, what would I do with a groundhog hide? He said, son, there's 1,001 things you can do with a groundhog hide. I said, like what? He said, well, now, say you's making you a banjo, buddy. Say you want to make one of them old-timey homemade fretless banjos. Well, you need to have you a banjo head. You need to stretch a hide over that rim to make the head. Well, you get you a young groundhog hide, and you stretch it over the rim of that banjo. For the head, it'll make the prettiest music. That banjo about play itself. There's nothing sweeter sounding than an old-timey banjo with a fresh young groundhog hide for a head, buddy. It's the sweetest music they ever was. Well, I allowed as how I didn't really have any banjos under construction. Did he have any other ideas? He said, well, now make you some shoestrings, buddy. I said, shoestrings? He said, yes, sir. It'll make the best shoestrings you ever have tied. He says, now in the old days, you know, we couldn't just go out and buy shoestrings and stuff like that. We had to make what stuff we had. And when we needed shoestrings, what we'd do is we'd just get us a groundhog hide and we'd tan it. And we'd make shoestrings out of that hide. Boy, they're strong. You can't hardly break them. Groundhog hide makes the best shoestrings you ever have tied. Well, I said, well, how would I do that? He said, well, first you have to tan the hide. Well, how do I do that, Lodge? How do I tan a hide? He said, well, what you do is you got to get that hide and you get it all fleshed and scraped clean and you lay it in a dish pan or a bucket and you put some water in there and some wood ashes and you make you a slurry and let it sit there for about a week. Every couple of days, you check on it and you pull some of them hairs. Well, after a week or so, them hairs will start to slip off. Well, you take that hide and you rinse it off and you scrape all them hairs off and then you have to work that hide till it's tanned. Well, how do you work it? He says, well, you just work it over the back of a chair or something like that. You stretch and pull. You just keep that thing moving and stretching the whole time, from the time it's wet till the time it's dry. You do that right, buddy, and you have you a tanned hide. Well, I got intrigued. I thought, man, I'm going to have to try that. I got to thinking, my high-top hiking boots? Wouldn't that be great to have groundhog hide shoelaces on those boots? Oh, man, that'd be great. Well, I got to thinking, though, those shoelaces, they're about 4 or 5 feet long. I said, Lodge, how am I going to get a 4 or 5 foot shoelace out of a 1 foot groundhog hide? He says, you cut it in a spiral. You can make it long as you want that way. I said, oh, all right. Well, thanks, Lodge. I'm going to have to try that. So Lodge was getting ready to leave, and he said, now you be sure you render out that grease. He says, that's one fat groundhog. Like I told you, he's corn fed. Now you render out that grease. Groundhog grease? What would I do with groundhog grease, Lodge? He said, son, there's 1,001 things you can do with groundhog grease. Like what? I said. He says, you make medicine out of it. I said, medicine? He said, yeah, buddy, it makes good medicine. We use it for the children when they get the croup. I've took many a spoonful of that coming up. Now, I've had things that tasted better, buddy, but it'll help you. Lodge, how do I render out the grease? He says, about like you would lard. Well, Lodge, how do you render out lard? He said, son, how can I tell you anything if you don't know nothing to start with? Well, I said, well, like bacon grease or something like that? He says, yeah, you just take it like you had a piece of bacon. You put it on low heat in a frying pan. You just render it out. You just keep it on there, and that grease will cook out, and then you just pour it off. So when I cleaned that groundhog and I skinned him, he had big rolls of yellow fat. And I just cut that yellow fat out, and I put it in the frying pan, and I rendered it out. I came up with a pint of oil. And it was as clear as store-bought cooking oil. So now I had this pint of oil. Now, what am I going to do with all this groundhog grease? Well, I tasted a little bit of it. It tasted about like groundhog grease. I was wondering, now, what am I going to do with all this grease? So I had these baby food jars, and I poured some in each of the jars, and I closed them up. And then I went around to my neighbors, and I said, you know, Lodge killed a groundhog up there, and I rendered out the grease. I didn't know if you'd be wanting any. And people would say, yeah, have you got some? We were just running out of it. And so this gift greased the way, so to speak, for me to ask more neighbors more questions about how you use the stuff. Well, I'd hand over a jar and I'd say, like, what are you going to do with it? Well, not only the old timers, but people younger than me, like this one woman who had a couple of kids. She says, oh, yeah, when the children get sick with the cough or chest cold, you know that Vicks Vapor Rub stuff? I said, yeah. She says, well, you know how you rub it on the kid's chest? I said, yeah. And she said, well, it don't work very well unless it's cut half and half with groundhog grease. That makes it penetrate better. And boy, you cut that Vicks with the groundhog grease, and it'll really help them youngins. And one old guy was telling me, he says, buddy, when the arthritis and the rheumatism gets in my knees, I drink me some of that river yellow root tea, and I lay the groundhog grease to my knees. But it works in them joints. It's like a penetrating oil. Gets them joints a-working. When I was talking to another old friend of mine, he was telling me, now, I don't take a lot of baths in the wintertime when it's cold. But if I'm going to be out in the cold, dragging in the wood, or going out hunting or something, and it's really cold, he says, what I do the night before is I get the wood stove stoked up, and I lay the wood to it till that thing is just a roaring and a kicking off the heat, and I get me a wash tub right there beside that stove, and I take me a bath. I stand there right there by that stove, and I just turn around till I'm pink as a newborn baby, and then I lay the groundhog grease to me. Yes, sir, buddy, I just slather it on. And yes, sir, the next morning when I get up, my clothes slide on smooth as silk. I can stay out in that weather all day. I don't get cold. My skin don't get chapped. Oh, man, it's the best. I said, it's like a skin conditioner? He says, yeah, buddy, that's what it's like. It's like the best thing ever. Well, you know, I was talking to a woman I know who's a physician, and she works at a small rural clinic in the mountains. Well, she'd gotten some kind of a flu or some kind of bad cough, and she was hacking away, and she'd taken all her medications, and it was still lingering on. And about the second week, she was still in there in the clinic hacking away. She's the doctor, right? And finally, a couple of nurses who were local women from that area took her aside and said, honey, this cough has gone on long enough now. You need you some real medicine. And they handed her a little jar. Here's some groundhog grease, honey. Now you take this. So you can see it's still a part of the culture. Nowadays, there's all these modern wonder drugs available, but there's a lot of folks that know that when all else fails, a groundhog is something you can count on. Here comes Sally with a snicker and a grin. Here comes Sally with a snicker and a grin. Got groundhog grease all over her chin. Oh, groundhog. I did work up that high, and I made some shoelaces that I still use. I have them on my dress shoes. Now, I don't reckon I could be much more dressed up than that now, could I? So I took that groundhog and I parboiled him like Lige told me, and I boiled it with some spicewood twigs and some juniper berries for flavor. Then I laid him on a grill over some hot hickory charcoal, and I'll tell you, I put a little barbecue sauce on it, and that was about the best eating meat I ever had. You know, I thought about it. What do groundhogs eat? They eat nothing but fresh, green, tender things with a few nuts and berries, and they're like a concentration of all that's fresh and green and sweet and ripe and succulent. That's why groundhog meat tastes so good. You may think I'm getting sort of romantic about this critter, particularly if you've been trying to raise a garden in groundhog country, and those fresh, green, sweet, and tender things the groundhog is so fond of happens to be what you're trying to raise in your garden. Well, that'll ruin a romantic attitude in no time. Those little varmints will go through your garden row by row. They'll eat every little cabbage, broccoli, collard, every little squash, everything. They'll eat the berries off the berry bushes. They'll take bites out of the tomatoes. And sometime, they don't even stop at the garden. I had a friend who pitched her teepee out in the National Forest in West Virginia, and she would park her car at the trailhead, and she'd walk a mile or two into her teepee. She had spent most of the summer out there, and she was having a great time. But I guess what happened is that the winter before, road salt had splashed up under her car, and somehow a groundhog that was living near the trailhead got a taste for the salty flavor and started gnawing the water lines of her car. And she went to town one day, and by the time she got to town, she'd done like $300 or $400 worth of damage to her car engine, because the water leaked out. And she finally got the car fixed, but she didn't have any other place to park her car. And that salt-craving groundhog was still on the loose. So when she came back from town that day, after she got her car fixed, she bought a roll of chicken wire from the hardware store. She claimed she had to fence her car to protect it from that groundhog. Now when she told me this, I thought maybe she was stretching it a little bit, but she pulled out a snapshot There it was. She would lay the wire out on the ground, then drive her car onto it and fold the wire up around her car. I could see it in the photo. It was a Volkswagen Rabbit. She called it a rabbit in a cage. So here's an animal that many of us think as a notorious pestiferous varmint. But viewed in the traditional context, this varmint is transformed from a no-good pest, from a bane to a blessing. Among traditional folks, the groundhog becomes a source of food, clothing, well, shoestrings anyway, medicine, and music. The groundhog can feed and nurture and nourish us, entertain us, and heal us in body and spirit. We'll eat that meat and we'll save the hide. We'll eat that meat and we'll save the hide. Makes the best shoestrings that you ever have tied. Oh, groundhog.
Next week on U62, he's back. And this time, he's mad. Gandhi 2. No more Mr. Passive Resistance. He's out to kick some butt. This is one bad mother you don't want to mess with.
Don't move, slangball.
He's a one-man wrecking crew. But he also knows how to party.
Give me a steak, medium rare.
Hey, Baldy!
There is only one law. His law. Gandhi 2.
Well, I was telling this to a friend of mine who's a Cherokee Indian, and I was asking him about it, and he said, oh yeah, that's right, groundhog's mating season. He said, you know what they do? What they do? What do you mean? He says, what the male does when he comes up to a den where he thinks the female might be? I said, no. He says, what he does, he pounds his feet on the ground in front of the den and then whistles. And if she's there and she's receptive, she'll come out and greet him. I guess it's like knocking on the door and serenading. He said that when he was a youngster and he was raised in the mountains over near the reservation, he said he used to go out in the early spring and he'd go up to groundhog dens and he would do just that. He'd pound and he'd whistle and sometimes she'd come out. If she came out to greet him, he greeted her with a swift blow from a stout stick and he took that sweet young thing home to dinner. He said he was praised greatly by his traditional grandparents for bringing home food during this traditionally hungry time. He was able to bring home fresh meat without using a gun or a knife, just using his own skill and his own cunning. Well, I got to thinking, a groundhog is a Native American animal. How do Native Americans relate to groundhogs? So any time in my travels, if I'd run into a Native American, I'd ask, what about groundhogs? Well, I was talking to a fellow who was a Lenape Indian, a tribe from the eastern woodlands in Pennsylvania, New Jersey area. This fellow says, oh, groundhog, yes. Groundhog is a medicine animal. I said, a medicine animal? How's that work? He says, a groundhog knows all the medicine plants. That's his food. Groundhog is made of medicine plants. And what he said stayed with me. And one day I was walking with a friend along the Hudson River at a historical park. There was an old mansion with white pillars and acres of beautiful lawns with big old trees. It's a great place for a stroll on a summer evening where you can watch the sun set over the Hudson River. It was late afternoon and we were strolling along down there. I couldn't help but notice out in the middle of one of the lawns was a groundhog. Now I saw some people walk by and they walked fairly close and the groundhog didn't run away. Well, down in the southern mountains, I can assure you that groundhogs, when they see you, they are gone. Well, this critter was semi-tame. It was used to people walking by. There was no hunting in this park and no irate gardeners or farmers either. Nobody paid much attention to the groundhog, and the groundhog had learned that it didn't have to pay much attention to the humans. It had lost a lot of its fear of people. So I started going closer and closer and closer. The groundhog didn't seem to be paying me much mind, so I kept moving in a little closer. And then it kind of looked up at me sort of suspiciously, as if to say, this human's acting pretty weird. It stopped eating and it watched me. Well, one of the things I've learned about being around wild animals, I can remember, especially as a young naturalist, how I would go out in the woods and I might see a deer, and the deer would pop out of the bushes and its ears would be up and its eyes would be wide open, staring right at me. Its nostrils would be flared, just trying to get a sense or a scent of who I am. I'm so excited. I just look how close I am to this deer, and my eyes are wide open, just like the deer, drinking in every second of this close encounter, watching every moment, trying to get a sense of this deer. And I'm thrilled to be in the presence of such an alert wild thing, and I'm glued to its every movement, and there's this incredible psychic energy going on between the two of us. It's building, and it's building, and it's building, and all of a sudden the deer goes and charges off into the bushes and disappears. Well, what I've learned since those days is that if I can just soften my way of being, be a little less intense, not broadcasting all this intense psychic energy towards the deer or whatever animal it is, if I can just sort of be there, just being instead of doing, I guess that's what the Eastern religions have been trying to teach us for centuries. If I can just soften my look, don't stare. It's impolite to stare. And besides, that's what a predator does. They stare right at their prey. So I try not to stare. I look away now, soften my breathing, quiet my mind. And often I can see the effect on the animal. The animal becomes almost like a biofeedback machine. The animal would calm down with my calming down. And that's just what happened with this groundhog. Every time it would stop and look up at me, I would just look away and breathe. Soon I was sitting down there on the lawn. The groundhog is about 20 feet away. And I'm just looking at the plants and things, not staring at the groundhog, just glancing over now and then, casually easing my way closer. Its nose was to the ground. Its mouth was working constantly, like a quiet, furry little lawnmower. What was it eating so enthusiastically? Soon I was close enough to see. It was in a patch of clover, munching away, white clover and red clover too, eating the flower heads and the leaves too. I slowly crawled closer. The groundhog kept an eye on me, but it never stopped eating. Then it moved to a patch of dandelions, and it started eating them. It was there munching away, eating each dandelion leaf right down to the ground. In a little while, the groundhog moved on to a patch of plantain leaves. You know, plantain, plantago, that smooth, oval leaf plant that's so common in yards and lawns. Well, it chowed down on that patch of plantain for a little while. And then it moved on to a patch of wood sorrel. You know, wood sorrel, oxalis, the little plant with the three heart-shaped leaflets, has a sour taste. Kids love it. Lots of people call it sour grass. Well, the groundhog helped itself to a few mouths full of wood sorrel. I guess it wanted a little something tangy as a dressing to go along with this lawn salad it was eating. Next, the groundhog waddled over to the edge of this brushy thicket and began to browse on large, succulent violet leaves. Now, I'd been on my hands and knees crawling along behind this groundhog all the time. Little by little, I was getting closer and closer. And by the time it got over to the violets, I was right beside him. I was so close I could have reached out and touched him. I was trying to get near the front so I could see his mouth and I could watch him eat. And suddenly the groundhog looked over at me and stopped chewing, as if it suddenly realized that this huge, clumsy critter that had been hanging around might actually be a threat. This was my moment of truth. How could I reassure this critter? How could I show this groundhog that I meant no harm? Well, I quickly bent my head down, bit off a mouthful of violet leaves, and started chewing as obviously as I could. And while I was doing this, I tried my own brand of interspecies communication. Who, me? I thought as telepathically as possible. Don't worry about me. I'm a vegetarian. This week, anyway. See, I ate the same things as you. Good leaves. Yes, sir. Love them leaves. I chewed and I smacked my lips. And as their green, mild, slightly sweet flavor filled my mouth, I remembered how much I really do like violet leaves. You know, they are edible and nutritious, and I bent down and ate a few more. Well, this apparently satisfied the groundhog. He went back to feeding, and the two of us continued munching away there, side by side, for quite a while. And as I munched, I felt like I was beginning to understand why the groundhog is known as a medicine animal. In the 20 or so minutes that I'd spent with that groundhog, it showed me probably five of the most useful and abundant healing wild plants on the North American continent. Take clover. Red clover blossom tea is one of the favorite healing tonics of herbalists. It has even been shown to have constituents that fight cancer. Dandelion is one of the richest natural sources of vitamin A and potassium and a bunch of other nutrients, and is tonic for the liver and the urinary system. And we grow dandelions in our garden on purpose, and we eat the greens. And you can eat plantain leaves, too. You can crush the leaves up and make a poultice that's a great remedy for bee stings, mosquito bites, and skin irritations. Sorrel makes a great addition to salads, and violet leaves are edible and nutritious and can be made into a healing poultice or a salve. Yeah! Medicine animal. I think I know what they're talking about. My Lenape friend said, we often use the groundhogs to make medicine drums. And I thought, oh, a medicine drum. I might not be able to make a banjo, but a medicine drum, I could probably make a drum. So I made a hoop out of a wide white oak splint. And the next time I got a groundhog hide, I stretched it over the hoop and listened to the sound. I asked a Chippewa Cree friend of mine about groundhog. He said, my uncle was named Groundhog. How would you say that in your language? I asked. Woodchuck. Is that where we get the name woodchuck? Well, you know, I went and looked it up in the dictionary. It said woodchuck as a corruption of the Algonquin, woojack. They spelled it W-U-J-A-K. I guess woodchuck was as close as English speakers could get to the Algonquin Indian word woojack. How much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck would? Well, it's probably as hard for a woodchuck to chuck wood as it is for an English speaker to pronounce Algonquin. I still can't answer that old riddle, but it sure does make a lot more sense now. Well, how does woodchuck translate, I asked. He thought about it for a minute. Woodchuck was not a word he had to translate very often. He said the core of the word is nibbler. It's one of the nibblers. Then there's prevalent in the word. And stout is a part of that word, too. Yes, he said it would be prevalent stout nibbler. Sounds like common fat rodent to me. I learned some other native animal names that day. See if you can recognize this one. A raccoon. Yeah, it translates out as shoreline wanderer. That makes sense, because that's just what raccoons do. Whether it's a creek or a lake or a seashore, coons spend lots of time right on the shoreline. How about this name for the little ground squirrel? A chipmunk, see? Cute little one who runs down the tree head first. Or how about this one? A skunk? Yeah, right, skunk. It translates out as a stimulating puff of wind. Isn't there anything to the word about smell? I asked my friend. He said, no, but stimulating is definitely a part of that word. He said, we see groundhog as an intermediary spirit. An intermediary spirit, I asked? He said, yes, an intermediary between Mother Earth and Father Sky. Because it spends half the year deep within the bowels of the Earth Mother. And yet when it emerges from the depths, it looks skyward and has the whistle of the eagle. And the eagle is the high-flying, far-seeing master of the heavens. This shrill, explosive whistle. This is what gives the groundhog its name, whistle pig. And that's what groundhogs are called all through the southern mountains. The early French voyageurs heard the groundhogs and their western cousins, the marmots, calling to each other, and they gave them the name Le Siffleur, the whistler. And this is what groundhogs are called in parts of Quebec today.
Woodchuck, whistle pig, call him what you will. Woodchuck, whistle pig, call him what you will. We'll sell that hide for a $2 bill. Oh, groundhog.
And I'm Tobe. You've been listening to the Dubious Goals Committee Groundhog Day Special, starring Doug Elliott. And not much of me, because we're already out of time, so I'm gonna bolt. Dubious Goals Committee airs every day at 19:30. Be sure to check it out. I am out of here, so